The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got what I believe to be a pretty straightforward Q&A show today. Got several questions. Hopefully we'll get to a question of the week, so a recent submission by a listener. Sure, we'll have a couple of Social Security questions, and then our normal mixture of whatever random things Jim decides to go over, so... You all know how it works if you're a long-time listener. If you're new, buckle up. You probably haven't experienced a podcast quite like this one. And I'm not sure I mean that in a braggadocious way. It's
No, wait, whoa. That doesn't sound very good.
Really? I'm just being honest.
What's wrong with our podcast?
Is there, first of all, are there any other podcasts like this where there's little to no production value? We don't really prepare ahead of time, and that's very evident in the way we kind of stumble through things randomly, and strange things come up, and we talk about anything under the sun, you know, the genetic makeup of cotton fields, or, you know, who knows what'll come up on the show that's not necessarily related to retirement planning. So that's what I mean. It's kind of a one-of-a-kind deal. And I'm not saying it that, oh, the reason why we're one of a kind is because we're so much better than anything else out there, is what I meant. It's just unique. And some people like it. Some people may not like it, but it's who we are.
All right.
You feel better about it now?
I'm a little hurt, but that's okay.
You're a little hurt.
Well, no, there's not great production value and...
No.
Probably the mastery of the English language for 50% of the hosts, at least, is not too good. But I think we give good information.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't really talking about that. I was talking about all the stuff that comes along with that information.
Okay. Anyways, folks, I'm Jim Salnier, and my cohort here who is doing all the talking and throwing the podcast under the boat is Chris Stein. We are in Colorado, and Chris actually is the director. Is that the best term I can give you? The director of the financial planning program at Colorado State University, mm-hmm. and he's a certified financial planner.
Yep.
I am Jim Salnier, a certified financial planner and namesake of Jim Salnier & Associates, a company that helps people retire, at least under our approach to retirement planning, which is based on what we call the Secure Retirement Income Process. Anyways, we never had an intro like that. Has that improved the production quality of the podcast at all, you think?
No, not in any way.
Wow. All right. Well, we could just keep doing it the way we've always done it.
Oh, we're going to keep doing it. Yeah, no, we're going to keep doing it the way we've always done it. This is kind of a, you know, you like it or you don't like it kind of deal.
Exactly. And if you don't like it, you're not listening, so who cares? Yeah. But for those who do like it and appreciate what we're trying to do, all jokes aside, Chris and I are both very busy people. I run a financial planning program. Chris works there. He is the director of the CSU program. He has a wife. He has six children, a bunch of dogs. And yeah, we're busy. So I've always said, if somebody can't take an hour or two out of their time, now we do it twice a week, but if you can't take an hour or two once a week or twice a week to talk about your career, or at least what you help people do in your career without needing a script, and maybe you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. And we just literally decide what to talk about, and we talk about it. All right, anyways, enough of that. Before we jump into the Q&A show, longtime listeners are going to know we always begin with about two questions that go to Chris with Social Security, occasionally an Irma question or two. I'm going to do a PSA, public service announcement. Chris is probably cringing right now because I never told him about this. No need to cringe, Chris. This is, I think, a good PSA. One that really pissed me the hell off this morning, I'll tell you that much. Excuse my language, folks. So this morning, a little after 7, I get a text alert from LifeLock that a short-term loan has been attempted to be taken out in my name. Wanting to know if this was me. Almost 2-3 seconds later, I start getting texts, clearly junk texts, with links for me to click for additional information. So I logged into LifeLock, and one of the things, and I'm going to give a shout out to LifeLock or any good credit monitoring service, I personally feel it's worth it. Now, longtime listeners will know several years ago, someone stole my, everybody's identity has been stolen. It's not that I was stolen. It's just that mine, I guess, has risen to the top of the pile today for all the fraudsters out there. One of them decided, oh, here's one. We got this off the dark web. Let's try stealing money from the sky. If you guys are sitting out there not knowing or thinking your ID has ever been stolen, you're foolish. I think you would agree with that. In fact, Chris, you're the one who told me that once. If you go through life not thinking your ID has already been stolen 10 times over, you're kidding yourself. You agree with that?
Yeah, all of our personal information is out there, unless you've lived under a rock and never interacted with any type of electronics or internet service, you're out there. And you don't even have to do that. Even people living under a rock, if they've got physical documents at their local county, city, state, most of that information is out there too. So they've got your vitals, they've got your social security number, they've got your date of birth, they've got where you live. All of that stuff is public knowledge, as much as you might have thought you wanted to protect it.
Right. And several years ago, and I shared it openly on the podcast, encouraging people to do what I ended up doing, someone had stolen my ID, probably years earlier even. But again, it was my turn for them. And they were trying to open up a loan for several hundred thousand, $300,000+ through Chase Bank. And I got a LifeLock alert to that, and I could squash it. These people had my name, my address, my social security number. What they couldn't get through, thankfully, to Chase was, you know how, I don't know what it's called, Chris, but you have to go on and answer questions that I kind of based, I think, off of your life history. Like, did you ever live at this? Did you ever own this car? What? So they couldn't get through those questions. So it got killed. And then I ended up getting a letter in the mail apologizing from Chase Bank that my loan didn't go through. And that's when I started saying, well, something's wrong here. And it was right around that time I also got an alert from LifeLock. Anyways, I won't bore you guys with everything. LifeLock was very helpful with Chase Bank. They got Chase Bank on the phone for me. I didn't have to do it. And they got the fraud department on the line. And they brought the fraud department up to speed on what the issue was. So it truly saved me time as I squashed this and cleaned up everything. And then I put credit freezes on. Was it freeze or locks? Which one is it, Chris? The I always get confused. Which one do I have? I have the one where...
I think it's called a freeze, but...
Okay. So I put the one that keeps anyone from looking at your credit report. And if you wanted to apply for a loan, you have to unfreeze it. I think it's a freeze. You have to unfreeze it. So that's the one that I got several years ago. And I've been sleeping fine with that until today. And it's what I found out today that makes me happy I did something. When all this was going on and I was on my LifeLock, I started looking at my account closer. And there's a lot of things that LifeLock tracks if you authorize it to, and if you put the additional information in. So I put all the banks that I have accounts in there, all my credit cards, and a bunch of other things that it was asking you for. And I had never done that until I ran into this issue several years ago. One of the things that was on there was this weird thing that said, turn on payday loan blocking. And I thought, payday loan blocking, I'll turn it on. Why not? Mm-hmm. I'm never going to apply for a payday loan. So I just clicked activate or turn on a little green thing. The little slide button went over to the right and it formed a green line indicating this is now on. And it's the fact that I did that, I found out, that kept this loan from being open today. They tried twice. Mm. What I did not know, Chris, and maybe our listeners wouldn't know this, to get a short-term loan, be it a payday loan, or I didn't even know they had these short-term rental loans. Mm-hmm. These types of short-term loans do not pull your traditional credit report. Mm-hmm. They go to other services, and LifeLock gave me the 4 or 5, I forget how many there are. I was kind of pissed that now I got to go to these services mm-hmm. and turn on freezes at them as well. But these other companies will be the companies that the short-term payday loan or I can't pay my rent, cover my rent for me this month type loan things pull. Well, LifeLock's payday loan blocking or locking service, I forget what it's called now, kind of intercepts that and keeps it from going through. Hmm. And that's what kind of saved me. They blocked it, and they blocked it twice. And I've been reading on this and finding out more, and then LifeLock, of course, has some help. I did not call them personally. I got all this from what I could gather from their website. And then I chatted with ChatGPT about all this. So I put the text messages into ChatGPT, told it that it was a fraud management security expert, blah, blah, blah. And then it read the texts that I was getting and was pulling information for me. And it was showing me the websites. I don't have them in front of me. I'm doing this from memory. But I was doing all this morning, which ticked me off because I forgot to put my trash out. So I got my trash again for another week. But it confirmed that some of the links in the text, and I got about 7 or 8 of them from different links and different companies asking me for just, oh, we have your thing and your application, please click here for your $6,700 application is pending approval. They word it in such a way that you're going to be worried. You think you're going to click here to try to kill it. Well, these websites, according to ChatGPT, were actually fraudulent websites, and it showed me links to other fraud monitoring services that gave me some information. It was kind of eye-opening today. I just want to let everybody know that putting a freeze like I have on my 3 main credit bureau, Equifax, TransUnion, and I always forget the third one. What is it, Chris?
Yeah, I always forget the third one, too.
Whatever. There's the 3 main ones. It begins with an E. I know that. Chris will find it in a second, folks. I thought putting a freeze there would allow me to sleep. Not anymore, since short-term loans, and clearly someone had enough information to get this loan application submitted. I have no idea what LifeLock did when I moved that little toggle to activate payday loan locking or blocking, whatever they call it. And then they tell you, if you're going to apply for payday loan, make sure you unlock it before applying and then lock it again immediately when you're done. Well, I didn't do that, obviously. But as I dug deeper, It's only then that I found out payday loans use these different services, not this other one for, I guess, real loans, not these short-term little mini loans. And now I have to go to, I think, four or five different services now and freeze my credit or lock it there as well. So I'm a little perturbed over that, that Congress or the regulators would make it so freaking difficult. And now there's four or five other companies that I'm the product. Them monitoring my credit. I'm the product. And they can do this without my consent. And if I didn't have this at LifeLock, this blocking thing, those loans might have went through today. Because if a very, well, short or small amounts of money relative to the people listening to this podcast, a couple of $100, a couple of $1,000, but enough where it's going to piss you off if they're people coming after you now saying, well, you took out this loan. So anyways, I'm still in the research. You could tell I'm still in the perturbed sense right now. Mm-hmm. But as I dive deeper in and stop blocking my credit at these other websites too, according to LifeLock's instructions, LifeLock apologized in their, again, I didn't talk to a person, but their website has all this text saying, hey, we're sorry. We can't do this for you. You have to do it. And that's what kind of ticked me off. Congress need and the regulators need to wake up, get their heads out of their hiney, and make it easy for consumers. If I want to pay a company like LifeLock and pay them for convenience, because this is what I keep them for, convenience. I don't have the freaking time to log in and check credit reports daily and do whatever it is LifeLock is doing behind the scenes every day. I would rather pay them $300, $400, $500 a year. I don't know what I pay them, but it's well worth it. They need to make this more convenient, and they don't. And that is what's ticking me off right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
have you ever heard of that, Chris?
No, I wouldn't have thought that there would be any difference in payday loans when you had your credit blocked or frozen, that those somehow would just, you know, go through some alternative path or something that I had no
idea
about.
LifeLock warns you, Chris, right on their website. I didn't see all this till now. If you freeze at the big three, that is not going to stop a payday loan. Mm. Payday loans use these other services, and they listed them. There were four or five. Mm. And they have the links right to their website. And then they say, unfortunately, we cannot block these for you. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. And now I have to, I'm glad they had this payday loan blocking, and I did try this morning for about 20 or 30 minutes on LifeLock's website to figure out what exactly they're doing. How did they block this? But I'm glad they had that. And why is it a toggle that you have to turn on? It should just be turned on for you.
Yeah.
You should have to turn it off. LifeLock should have this on automatically and say, hey, if you want to get a payday loan, slide this to the left and shut it off. If I didn't see that a couple of years ago when I was dealing with this Chase Bank thing, folks, I don't know if these loans today would have went through. I'd be approved for payday loan in a heartbeat with my credit. You kidding? And whatever else is this these companies track. And then I'd have to be dealing with loans now that are not mine, and I have to now fight having to pay them back and get them off my credit report. So anyways, people, I'd look into it if I were all of you. And if you don't have a credit monitoring service, you guys are foolish. Most people listening to this podcast, you can afford $300, $400, $500 a year. You should be. I'm not saying you got to hire LifeLock. I've just been with them for years. But to me, for the convenience and what they've saved me now over the past couple of years, it's well worth it.
Hmm. Yeah,
and
interesting.
Put freezes. Do you put freezes on yours now too, didn't you, Chris?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So people, if you don't have freezes, do it. And then go to these other websites and freeze so short-term payday loans don't get taken out in your name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks
anyway,
for saying, thanks
what
for bringing
that. To me
that's,
this morning.
Yeah. Yep.
It's my PSA, and I'm a little perturbed that I forgot to get my trash out. And if you don't get it out by 8 o'clock here, it's gone.
Right.
And by the time I realized it was too late, so now I got to keep my trash for another week.
Yeah.
Okay. I digress and I will shut up about that, but hopefully someone, this will help people listening and they can save themselves some headaches in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's get to some Social Security questions. How's that, Chris?
Sounds good.
All right. This first one came in from, okay, no state hint, came in from our website, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And it seems when people contact us through that, they don't really give a state hint, which is fine. This particular listener is a podcast listener, though. He is from the state. Oh, here's a little hint. You should be able to get this. He's from the state named after a president.
Well, you've used that same hint before.
I know it's the only one. All right. I'll change it.
Well, now I know.
He's from a state that grows cherries and apples.
Well, I know it's Washington from your first state, from your first hint, but I don't know that I've had Washington cherries, but I've had plenty of Washington apples.
What do you mean you haven't had Washington cherries?
Maybe I just didn't pay attention
cherries?
Where they came
what
from.
What rock have you been sleeping under?
Well, maybe I've had them, I just didn't notice that they were from Washington.
Tris, every late summer, well, they usually come out around July-ish, late June, July, so midsummer. The cherries are all from Washington State. Hmm. You got some starting pretty soon from California, but the Washington State cherries are the best.
Yeah, I'm not a big cherry consumer, so that's probably why I don't buy
you don't
cherries.
Like cherries?
Typically. Not really. No, I'm an apple guy. Strawberries, other berries.
What do you got against a cherry? They're so good.
Yeah, just not that into it. Although I love cherry lifesavers.
Well, there you go. That's much more healthier for you, too, than a real cherry. Okay, here's this question. I have a question regarding Social Security's earnings test. My wife is retiring in July of 2025. So, pretty soon. Mm-hmm. What else is in July of 2025, Chris?
Your 70th birthday?
Negative, but it is chocolate cake and white frosting day in July. My wife is retiring in July of 2025, but she will have made well over the earnings test limit of approximately $23,000. She will have made well over that by June. If she were to start her Social Security retirement benefit in July, is she still going to be subject to the earnings test, given she no longer has income? Also, she has applied starting in July. But is there a process whereby she can pull back the application given no benefits received to date? I think what he's asking there is, can she pull her app even though she already put it in there? Mm-hmm. I believe she would rather start in January to forgo any conflict with the earnings test. Thank you very much. I listen to your twice weekly podcasts regularly. Mm-hmm. I think you have good news for this Washingtonian George.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I will. So first, if you they recommend you apply for your benefits well in advance of you receiving them to give them time to get everything set up and make sure that there's no delays in there. So the general recommendation is you want to apply about 3 months before your benefits you're wanting to start. So that's, you know, makes sense that they've applied at this point, maybe on a little on the early side. But as long as you haven't received any benefits yet, it's actually quite easy to change things. You can just call or contact the Social Security Administration and alter that claiming date. So that shouldn't be too much of a difficulty, and you wouldn't have to go through the formal process of what's called withdrawing your application. Withdrawing your application is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and it's after you've started benefits. As long as you withdraw the application within 12 months of the start of benefits, and you pay back all the benefits received to that point, they'll let you start over and as if you hadn't claimed at all. But since you haven't received benefits yet, you don't have to get to that level. So I think that would be easy to do. However, I don't think you need to, and that's because of the second piece of information I'm going to share about the earnings test. While it is true, and what you didn't share in your email to us is how old your wife is, for part of my answer, it doesn't matter. But for this first part, the earnings test, which applies to people under their full retirement age, offsets your benefits depending on if you have exceeded a certain earnings amount for that particular year, earnings from wages. But there's a special rule in the year you turn your full retirement age that if you claim benefits that year, the earnings test is much higher. The earnings limit, I should say, is much higher. So I'm not going to go down that road because it doesn't really matter for my answer, but be aware that there is a, you know, the actual earnings limit you have depends on whether you've reached the year of your full retirement age or not. You didn't mention that, so I don't know. But what's going to apply here is what's called the grace year. In the first year that you claim Social Security benefits, if you have retired, they will obviously, you know, a lot of people would fall into the same circumstances you are, where up to the point of retirement, you made good money and you've made maybe blew past the earnings limit. Let's pretend she's younger than her full retirement age. The earnings limit in 2025 is $23,400. And if you have earnings above that amount, they'll withhold $1 for every $2 over that limit from your Social Security benefit. So if you've earned well past that $23,000, the earnings test might completely destroy your Social Security benefit if you were to claim it. However, they realize a lot of people do what your wife is going to do. They're going to work, make good money, but then retire and then have no more earnings. And they've designed a rule to protect people like that. The grace year states that in the year that you first claim your Social Security, if it benefits you, they will actually apply the earnings test, not on an annual basis, looking at the total earnings for the year, but rather on a monthly basis. And that monthly amount, if we convert that $23,400 into a monthly amount, it's $1,950. So if she truly retires in July and then has no more earnings, what they say is in the months after she retires and she's now claiming Social Security, as long as she has no earnings above $1,950 a month, they will pay her full benefits in those months. However, if she exceeds that $1,950, it eliminates the benefit, the Social Security, from that month. So it's a kind of an on-off switch. But if she's retired, has no more earnings, then there's no risk of her exceeding that $1,950 per month. You can earn $1 million in the months before that retirement, before you claim your Social Security, and it doesn't matter in the grace year because they'll apply it monthly. Normally, though, they do apply the earnings test on an annual basis. So this is kind of a one-time get-out-of-jail-free card for those who retire partway through the year and have good earnings prior to retirement. They essentially say, if you want to go on Social Security after you retire, we're not going to penalize you for having earnings that were very high prior to retirement, prior to turning on your Social Security. We will just pay you your full benefit, ignore those earnings as long as you don't exceed that monthly limit each month. That's the critical factor. You've got to stay under that monthly limit, which for 2025 is $1,950. So I don't think if your intention was for her to claim it in July, I mean, you could certainly change to January of 2026 if you wanted to, but you don't need to change it to that to avoid the earnings test because of what I just described. She will escape it because of the grace year is what it's called.
Perfect. All righty. Sorry about that slight pause there, folks. I was busy sending emails to staff. For ends, Chris, sometimes you think that, all right, I caught up on everything today. And guess what?
Nope, missed something.
Nope, not even close. All righty, let's get to the next Social Security question. So I have to click over to it. I apologize again. This is what we're talking about, live recorded radio. Okay. This one, actually, okay, now I get it. You know, I have this new computer, Chris, and folks. Mm-hmm. The touchpad, so there's got to be a way to turn it down. I'm sure there is. I'll Google it. Mm-hmm. The touchpad is so touchy. Mm-hmm. I just slide my finger across it, and it either blows up the text in my email so big, like two words are on the screen, or it makes it so small that the entire email looks like the size of a pinhead. Oh, that's so annoying. There's got to be a way to lessen the sensitivity, right? Please tell me there is.
There should be.
There better be. Okay. All right. So, next one. Let's see. This, too, came in through helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. See if he gave us a hint. No. Well, all right. So, he lives in the state where Chris will not eat their cherries, but will eat their apples.
So it's Washington Day at the
Washington. Well, apparently, yes, I didn't notice this, folks, when I was pulling these emails. So yes, he too is from Washington. Okay. Hi, Jim and Chris. Actually, it's hi, Chris. Hi, Jim. You guys are the most helpful, knowledgeable people I have ever come across. Why, thank you, listener. Especially Jim. He's brilliant. Thank you, listener. Can you direct me to a location of a table that gives survivor benefits monthly reduction percentages if I claim Social Security early? The SSA website is not that helpful unless you know their exact verbiage for those things. Yeah. They definitely could use a makeover. Thanks for your help. Well, I think our website definitely needs a makeover, so I don't want to pick on Social Security's website. But, Chris, I think you can help this guy out. I don't know if you know of a place he can go to, but you probably know the formula.
Yeah, and I understand the confusion. And that's because the three different main Social Security benefits, your own retirement benefit, spousal benefits, and survivor benefits, each have their own reduction factors for claiming them early, early being before your full retirement age. And on the your own retirement and your spousal benefits, the reference amount, the reference from which you apply the reduction, is your full retirement age. And then it's reduced on a monthly basis on a very straightforward formula. For instance, your retirement benefits are reduced 20% prorated over the first 3 years you're claiming early, and then an extra 5% per year thereafter. So if you're age 67, full retirement age, your own retirement benefits could be claimed as early as age 62, and that 5 years results in 30% reduction if you claim it at 62. Your spousal benefit, a little different but similar. The first 3 years you claim early a spousal benefit, the reduction is 25% prorated over that 3 years, and then 5% per year after that. So claiming at 62 is a 35% reduction versus at 67. Survivor benefits, though, don't have this kind of stepped schedule. They take this one maximum reduction and prorate it over the entire number of years or months that you are claiming early. And essentially what that does is it creates the reference point not being your full retirement age, but the reference point being the age at which you can normally claim a survivor benefit earliest, which if you're not disabled is the age of 60. And the reduction factor works like this on a survivor benefit. At 60, you receive 71.5% of your deceased spouse's benefit, essentially. And then you earn 100% of the survivor benefit at your full retirement age. So as we all know, your full retirement age could be 66, 66 and 2 months, 66 and 4 months, etc., all the way up to 67. It doesn't matter what your full retirement age is. If you claim at 60, you're going to get 71.5%. So you see the difference there, even though the number of months you're claiming early varies, because if you're 66, you're only claiming it 6 years early. If you're claiming, if your full retirement age is 67, you're claiming it 7 years early. But both of those people would get 71.5% at age 60. So what you essentially have to do to get to 71.5%, obviously that means they're reducing it by 28.5%. So what you do is you take 28.5% and divide it by the number of months you're claiming it early from your full retirement age, specifically your full retirement age for survivor benefits, which depending on your birth year might be a little different than the full retirement age for your own retirement benefit. But however many months those are, let's say it's between 66 and 67. So you're like 66 and 6 months. Let's say that's your full retirement age. So 66 times 12 66 times 12 is 792 months. And if you're 66 and a half is your full retirement age, that's 798 months. So if you essentially take 28 and a half and divide it by 798, that means that the reduction factor is about 0.035714% per month, which if we turn that into a yearly amount, it's about, did I do this right? 66, not 66, I apologize. 66 would tell us 6 years early, right? So 6 times 12 is 72. Plus the 6 for 78. So I apologize. We're not claiming at birth. We're claiming at 60. So if you claim at 60, even though your full retirement age is 66, that's 78 months early that you're claiming. They're going to take that 28.5% and prorate it over that 78 months, which means that 28.5 divided by 78, got my calculator here. That means that your reduction each month is 0.3654. per month, percent. So if we multiply that by 12, that essentially means about 4.4% per month is the reduction factor. So it's even, unlike your spousal and retirement benefit, where the reduction is a certain rate for 3 years and then a different rate per month for, additional years. Here, the rate per month of discount is exactly the same. They take that 28.5% and prorated over however many months are between 60 and your full retirement age. So the reason why you can't find a table is because the table would be different for everybody's different full retirement age. They'd have to have a separate table for 66, 66 and 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, etc. So there's no easy way to put that on a single table. That's why it's so hard to find the simple table that you would otherwise find. It's very easy to describe the spousal and retirement benefit early reduction factors. I did it, at the top of my answer here. It was pretty straightforward, right? But this one, because they go at it from a different angle, it isn't as easy to put in a table format. But once you understand what they're doing, it's actually quite simple, right? Just know that whatever your full retirement age is, you get 28.5% less if you claim at 60 and you prorate it, for however many months early that you're claiming. If you are halfway, that means it's going to be, 14.25%. So that's how that works. And that's why you didn't find it very easily on the Social Security website, is in a table format. They don't describe it like that.
I would wager somebody out there has an Excel spreadsheet with all that in there.
Oh yeah, you could build an Excel spreadsheet with it, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And there is a page, I can't spout it off the top of my head here, but there's a page at Social Security where you can put in your year of birth and then they will spit out for you your survivor benefit at different claiming ages. And their calculator on the back end, I doubt they're using Excel, but something else mathematical, determines what I just described. They just prorate that 28.5% reduction, of the years between 60 and your full retirement age, or the months specifically, and apply it that way. So it's evenly reduced all the way through that early claiming period, instead of having those two rates of reduction that we see on the spousal and retirement benefits. This is an even linear reduction, same percentage each month, all the way back to 60.
Okay. Perfect. I like it. Let's move on to non-Social Security questions. I've got a couple of short questions, not necessarily short answers, but short questions, series of short questions. And then one, if we have time, follow-up on a QCD. All right, this first question, they come from the state. They give a hint. This one gives a hint. I come from the state where the state flower is the bluebonnet, Texas. Damn it.
You're kind of like Ron, what's the guy's on Anchorman?
Anchorman.
You know, with Will Ferrell in it. He plays the newscaster, and the joke was he'd read anything that was put in front of him
on
the teleprompter. So they played a joke on him and just put a bunch of stuff on there he shouldn't say, and he just read it without even thinking.
Well, in the we've been
Ron
doing this
Burgundy.
For years.
Ron Burgundy was Burgundy. His name from
the number Anchorman. Of questions I have read. This is the first time I actually read the answer at the same time. So here to take a guess what state he's from?
That would be the large state of Texas.
Large state of Texas. I guess the state flower in Texas is the bluebonnet. Oh, you're supposed to be playing against ChatGPT. That's right. So I need to open up my ChatGPT for the next one. Remember? You're going to play against them?
Yeah,
so far, ChatGPT is winning, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember. I think we were tied.
Tied? All right. All right. For me, my very first RMD, my current age is 73, is coming up in October of 2025. Now, one thing that...
Well, you're gonna remind him that that's not really how that works.
Yes. Unless you do. Why don't you do?
The RMD isn't due in October of 2025 when you turn 73. When you wake up January 1st of the year you're going to turn your RMD age, which in your case is 73, your first RMD is due at that point. It isn't when your birthday rolls around. The first RMD is due January 1st of the year that you turn your RMD age. Period. That's
and
just how
he
that
can
works.
Delay it.
He could delay it. Yep. Yeah, he could delay taking it. It's still due, but he could delay taking it until April 15th of the year following the year that, well, I take it back, April 1st.
I was going to say, yeah, it's your birthday.
Yeah, I know, yes. I know. I caught myself. April 1st. Right. My mind is on tax day coming up, so that's April 15th. It's stuck in there. April 1st of the year following the year that you have taken RMD. However, that year, if you do that, you'll have to take two RMDs because when January 1st of that next year rolls around, the next RMD is due and you don't get a delay on that one. You have to take it that year. So you could delay it, but be clear, you can't do anything special in the months leading up to your 73rd birthday, or if your RMD age is 75, in those months prior in that year, you have already reached the requirement to take an RMD.
So far, so good. Excellent, Chris. So Chris hit on everything that I wanted to cover in that first very brief sentence.
Yeah.
Here's his question. For my tax filing records, can you point to me the specific location in the IRS publication? I think what he means by that is the IRC code, Internal Revenue Code, that specifies that a tax withheld from an IRA RMD, and it doesn't have to be a tax withheld from the IRA's RMD. It can be a tax withheld from any IRA distribution, whether that distribution is an RMD or not. But can you, again, point me to the IRS publication that specifies that the tax withheld from an IRA RMD is treated as having been taken throughout the entire year? This is desirable for me as it negates the need for me to do quarterly estimated taxes. Provided that enough tax has been withheld from my RMD in October. Again, as Chris said, listener, the quote-unquote RMD can be taken any time, not just October. I have looked everywhere and never been able to find that rule specified in IRS documentation. Thanks for all things you, Chris, and the other associates have taught me on your podcast. And he gives his name, but we will call him, as we always do, George. Okay, well, I have good news, George. I do have that exact part of the IRC, if you will. And it is, get ready to write this down, Code section 6654 and a G, it's a small g in parentheses, 1, and that 1 is also in its own set of parentheses. Code section 6654G1 says withholdings are considered to be evenly spread throughout the year, regardless of what point in the year they were actually withheld. That is direct from the big man's company himself, mm-hmm. Ed Slott.
And I don't think it's withholdings. I don't think that refers just to IRAs, does it? Isn't it withholdings in general are treated that way? Or is it specifically?
Only withholdings from an IRA is considered evenly split throughout the year, not from a brokerage account.
No. I meant from like taxable distributions, like or taxable income, which a distribution from an IRA is treated as ordinary income, as we all know.
But I don't know where you're going with this. I do know the only one that's considered received equally throughout the year is withholdings from an IRA distribution, not withholdings from payroll, not withholdings from a brokerage account, just from an IRA.
Yeah. So what, and not from a 401k?
I don't know. You threw me for a loop on that one.
Let me look it up while you're talking some more and see if it calls it out.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Anyways, listener, I did not know that off the top of my head. So I got a hold of the Ed Slott Group because they're the ones who told me. Personally, if I get something from the Ed Slott Group, I take that as gospel and I don't ask them to prove it to me and give me the code section. I don't think they have a problem with one of their members asking them that, but I did not know that off the top of my head, and it just never really dawned on me to ask specifically what code section gives that ability. I just kind of take what the Ed Slott Group tells me. But anyways, listener, that's what the Ed Slott Group sent me back. Hopefully that section will give you the information that you need to know. All right, Chris, let me know when you're ready for another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm not going to test ChatGPT on this. Oh, wait a minute. No, this is a good one because you'll get it. I'm curious to see if ChatGPT will get this answer. Let me open up a new chat, and I'm going to verbally speak the question. I would first have to tell ChatGPT that they are a trivia expert. Hold on. Let me do that first. Be helpful if I knew how to do that. All right, there we go. You are a trivia expert on United States trivia.
You
can't answer the question, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. What state is home to three pretty good pro sport franchises, as well as the Rocky Mountains? Let's get Chat's answer first. Okay, what says you?
Well, I say Colorado.
This was an easy one for you.
Yeah.
And ChatGPT folks said that would be Colorado. Colorado is home to three notable professional sports franchises, the Denver Broncos, the Denver Nuggets, and the Colorado Rockies. And it's also famous for the Rocky Mountains, which run right through the state. He does say.
What about the Avalanche?
That's what Chat does. Mm-hmm. Bonus. Colorado is actually home to the Colorado Avalanche, an NHL pro team as well. So anyways, pretty cool. All right, here's his question.
Maybe they weren't throwing the Nuggets into the Rockies into the good category.
Still a pro team. They might stink,
yeah, but didn't say pretty good. You said pretty good teams.
Pretty good pro team. Okay, yeah, I see.
Rockies are
with
not
that.
Pretty good.
Because the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Avalanche pretty are pretty good. Damn good.
Yeah,
Rockies
are
not
good. No. And that's not a personal
swipe. Actually, the way he has it worded, I see my state is home to three pretty good pro sports franchises and the Rockies. I thought he meant the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, yeah. No, he meant that. He was calling out the Rockies like that. Yeah. Just like I did.
Okay. Just like you did. All right. Okay, well, you and chat tied 1-1 on today's show. Okay. I somehow, this is the question now from the listener. I somehow ended up with a little extra cash in each of my two IRA accounts. It's not much, about $1,000 between the two IRAs. I am old enough to start taking distributions out of my IRAs without any penalty. So we know he's at least how old, Chris?
59 and a half years old.
59 and a half. I am thinking if I withdraw this cash, I will have to declare this approximate $1,000 as income. Mm-hmm. You are thinking correctly, listener.
Yep.
Assuming none of the $1,000 remaining has any type of after-tax basis. We have to always throw that caveat out there.
True.
There's a number of ways where people can get after-tax basis in their IRA. Assuming you don't have any in a traditional IRA. Assuming you don't have any after-tax basis in that traditional two traditional IRAs of yours, if you close those two little IRAs just to clean up your financial life, yes, you will have to declare that approximate $1,000 as income. He continues, but will I have to pay capital gains taxes as well? Thank you. He signs his name, but we will call him George. Why don't you help George out here, Chris?
Yeah, so the application or use of an IRA is essentially a special, I like to call it a bucket, in which you have assets like investments typically that might go up in value or go down in value. But while they're inside that bucket, what happens does not change their tax treatment. The tax treatment of withdrawals or distributions from that account is determined by the tax rules of the bucket itself. And the tax rules of that bucket state that other than after-tax basis, which you likely don't have in there, most people don't, all distributions from a traditional IRA are going to come out as ordinary income. And that's because the money that went in, no ordinary income. You had to have wages. You had to have income to put it in there. And that income was not taxed when you put it in, but it gets taxed on the way out. You luckily escape any other capital gains taxes on potential gains that you have in there because of this, call it an override of the tax treatment. Had those same investments been out in a brokerage account outside of the IRA, first, if that money originally came from earnings, from wages, you would have had to pay tax on those wages. And then any subsequent gain would be subject to what you're talking about, capital gains taxes, unless there was some other reason you were avoiding them. Maybe they're coming out in a tax bracket. There is a 0% cap gains bracket, so you effectively would avoid it that way. But money coming out of the IRA, capital gains is not a thing. It's ordinary income. And some people say, well, that's what makes the IRA bad. No, that's not the right way to look at it, because on a brokerage account versus an IRA, the brokerage account, you didn't get the tax deduction in the first place and you pay capital gains, even though the capital gains rate is generally lower than an ordinary income tax rate. With the, you paid both. You had to pay on the income and then you had to pay on the cap gains. In the IRA, all you ever pay is the ordinary income tax rate. You don't also have to pay the cap gains rate on top of it. That's what makes it a tax favored type of account.
I'll dispute that they're truly tax favored. I mean, we could go into the minutiae here, but you get none of the benefits in these quote unquote tax favored accounts, in my opinion, that you do when you put your capital at risk in a brokerage style account, what we call a maybe taxable account, and investing your dollars. Nowadays, investing has become another form of gambling. You can get in quote-unquote investment apps from a couple of these more name-brand companies. Robinhood is one that jumps to my mind. And trading and investing rather has become trading. Day trading has become the norm, unfortunately, for many people. And they're treating it more as gambling. It's a gambling addiction for many. But at its core, it's supposed to be where you are willing to put your capital at risk by funding capitalism itself, by giving money to businesses who then take that money and can use it to invest in the business and grow, and therefore your ownership stake in the shares you own hopefully increase. But Congress has rewarded that by saying, hey, you pay capital gains taxes, and if you have a loss, you can write it off. Inside an IRA or a 401k, it's always taxed as income, never cap gain. And cap gain, for those, keep in mind why we call it maybe taxable, gets a step up in basis at least in 2025 when we're recording this. They haven't changed the rule for decades now, but it gets a step up in basis at your death, so it can be received tax-free. If you suffer a loss, you can write that loss off against other gains. If you have no losses to write off, no gains to write off with your losses, you can carry those losses forward for an unlimited number of years, use it against future gains, or use it against $3,000 of ordinary income, which is even more valuable than against future gains. And if you time your income generation in any given year, you might pay zero cap gains. That's why we call it maybe taxable, because you have a zero cap gain bracket, a 15 cap gain bracket, and a 20 cap gain bracket, all significantly lower than their respective income tax brackets. So for all of those reasons, Chris, I do think a lot of the quote-unquote tax advantages of these tax-qualified retirement accounts are overblown.
Yeah, but don't forget you paid income tax on the way into the brokerage account. So you've paid income tax. You paid ordinary income tax.
You have to pay income tax on something unless the money was given to you as a gift. So you're going to have to pay income tax. I get that.
Correct.
But I often think the tax deferral, just look at the clients we work with, Chris. Mm-hmm. Coming to us with 80, 85, 90, 95 plus percent. We've had a few people, folks, who have all of their liquid wealth. And when I say all, maybe they have 10, 20, 30,000 in a bank, but the majority of their millions are in IRAs and 401ks. And they're faced with a tax nightmare. And especially at the death of the first spouse with the widow-widower tax penalty. And then their kids are going to be taxed even more under secure in a 10-year quote-unquote stretch that's going to force those dollars out at the kids' tax brackets. And by the time most kids inherit your wealth, they'll be in their 50s, 60s, or 70s, and could be especially in their 50s and 60s at their own peak earnings. I do feel these tax-advantaged funds are a red herring. The government knows they're making a killing in taxes on these. And they can pawn it off as they're being so helpful to you by putting after-tax dollars in this, because they know with all the rules, regulations, penalties associated with these accounts, they're going to tax the hell out of it than if you just paid some income and capital gains taxes throughout your life while you were working and had the cash flow to pay it. Just paid it throughout your life. They're getting a hell of a lot more in taxes.
Well, because you've grown it for them is what's happened, is you've grown it on their behalf. That's why they
and then they're going to take it,
right? but you, it wasn't yours in the beginning. I mean, it didn't belong to you in the first place, because when you put money in your IRA and you deduct it, they own whatever percent of that they're, you know, in your appropriate tax bracket. That's theirs. So you essentially have those two pieces, but you don't pay any other taxes on top of that. Whereas these, yes, there is a get out of jail free card when you die with the step up. That essentially makes the contributions that you made to your brokerage account pretty much like a Roth for your kids, because you paid income tax on the front end when you earned it, like you would with a Roth, and then you didn't pay any tax on the way out. So
and
that
kind of
equalizes
it,
but you have to die to make that happen.
But I will also say, with a lot of low-cost ETFs now, passively managed, you don't get a lot of tax distributions anymore from investments like you do from mutual funds. And you can turn a lot of your brokerage assets into wonderful cap gain. I take a cap gain any day of the week over IRD, income with respect to decedent.
But again, you've paid both then, Jim. That's my point. You paid income tax and you pay this cap gains tax, even though the cap gains tax is lower.
You might pay. You might
if
pay
you,
cap gains.
If it goes up, you're going to pay it.
No, you might pay it. You can gift it to kids or grandkids who can sell it at a zero cap gain bracket and use it to pay their expenses. Mm-hmm. You, if you don't need it, you die and it gets a step up in basis. You can gift it into a CRT, which you can't do while you're alive with an IRA asset. You can gift it into a CRT. The CRT can sell it, pay no taxes, and then start distributing money to you out that way. Granted, you'll have to pay taxes at that point. I'm not arguing that. I just think you have a lot more tax flexibility with
definitely.
Brokerage accounts.
There's more flexibility, but most of the benefits comes from you not using the money. You die, you give it away, donate it, stuff like that.
Even if you use it, you can, you know, we manipulate, we have millionaires with us. Well, most of our clients, folks, have 2, 3, 4, 5 million. I think everybody knows that. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. We work with people with millions of dollars, Chris, and we're getting them their health care paid for by Uncle Sam. How? We manipulate their income and they get ACA premium tax credits. You can manipulate your income and realize cap gains up to a couple of hundred, don't quote me on that, 100-something thousand, and paying nothing as a married couple. So I truly stand by this. You may pay taxes on. So I call them always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable. I think brokerage and Roth accounts are wonderful. IRAs, I'm not fully sold on.
It comes with a big bag of issues. But when you say maybe taxable, that is kind of ignoring the fact that you already did pay tax to put the money in there in the first place.
True. I'm talking on the growth.
Right.
The growth may be taxable.
Maybe taxable.
Inside the IRA, it's always taxable.
But you didn't pay any tax on the way in. So it's
But you're going to pay it on the way out. You don't get it tax free.
Oh, I know.
You either pay it going into the brokerage account, and I'd rather pay it now going into the brokerage account because I don't think taxes in the future, folks, is going to be lower than they are today. So I'd rather pay it going into the brokerage account and then manipulate the growth where some, I'm not saying all of it, some might be able to be received by me for my benefit during my life tax-free. And when I die, if it's left to a human because of the step-up in basis, they will pay no taxes at all.
Yep.
I still think that's good. Anyways, we could go back and forth on that. I don't want to. Let's jump into the next question. Okay. Oh, wait. I'm going to have to get ChatGPT ready. All right. See who's going to win this one between you and ChatGPT. I got to get ready to hit the little microphone and read the question at the same time. What state has the most sea turtle refugees?
Oh, what?
I'm not sure if it was refugees or refuges or refuge, but I said refugees.
It's probably refuges, yeah. But there'd be a lot of refugees at the refuges. So
true. A lot of sea turtle refugees.
I'm going to say Texas because of the coastline. It's on the Gulf of Mexico and just the sheer volume, the size of it, and is in the area close by where I know there's a lot of turtles. I know there'd probably be a lot of turtles over on the Florida side too. So Florida would be my obvious second guess, but I'm guessing Texas.
Okay. ChatGPT says Texas has 1,568 Florida turtle refuges or refugees? Refuges. North Carolina has 1,680.
What?
But Florida had 6,297.
Oh, so it's not even close. Yeah. Nope. Huh. Well, at least I was in the top three.
You're in the top three. But ChatGPT is beating you.
I'm surprised North Carolina has so many because I just imagine Texas having such a much bigger coastline, just a lot more space where it could happen, but maybe there's just a lot more turtles. Yeah.
Florida facilities released 6,297 sea turtles, surpassing other states, North Carolina 1,680 and Texas 1,568.
Okay.
But anyways, that is from ChatGPT. Here's his question. What is the maximum amount a person can contribute to their 401k from all sources if he or she is greater than 50 years old or if they're between 60 and 63? Mm-hmm. And this person goes on to say, I know people can contribute up to $23,500 of pre-tax to a traditional or Roth 401k. That limit is well known. But in addition to this, some 401k plans provide company matching and allow employees after-tax contributions. Because of this, there is also a maximum limit from all sources and at $70,000 in 2025. Mm-hmm. I can easily verify these two limits. But what I can't figure out are these catch-up contributions. 7,500 people older than age 50, mm-hmm. and now, thanks to Secure, an additional 3,750 on top of that mm-hmm. if you're between 60 and 63.
Yep.
Do I get to add that to the 70,000, or are those added limiting my 23,500? It makes sense to me that they should be added, but where are they added? Is my maximum 77,500 and 81,250 between 60 and 63? I think it is, but I cannot confirm this. Thanks for your time mm-hmm. and your every education. I think he meant very educational podcast, but it came out every. I've attached a picture taken 2 days ago in my brother-in-law's backyard. I'll describe this picture. It is a very big lizard with these massive teeth walking across his lawn. This gentleman lives in Florida, as we know, and there was a big alligator in this dude's yard. So that's the one thing. There's water everywhere in Florida. Yeah. You can't use it.
Yeah.
I know you know the answer to this. Why don't you help him out?
Yeah, we can absolutely confirm that catch-up contributions are always above and beyond what are called the 415 limits. That's the section of the IRC that defines what you were accurately describing as the $70,000 total amount from all sources that can be contributed to your retirement account in 2025. The catch-up contributions are in a separate IRC section and are not limited by the 415 limits that the $70,000. So you are right. If you're over 50 in 2025, your total limit of contributions from all sources is 77,500. Unless you are turning 60, 61, 62, or 63 in 2025. And in that case, you can do another 3750. So your interpretation is correct. And we can confirm that. What I don't have at my fingertips is the other IRC code section that describes the, catch-up contributions, but that's why it's not limited by the 415 limit, is it's a separate code section that was written to create those catch-up contributions. They are always, have always been intended to be above and beyond the normal 415 limit.
I knew you knew the answer to that because you and Jake talked about this several months ago, but I know you guys covered this ad nauseum on one day that I wasn't on the podcast.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Does that wrap it up, or do you want to do another? I can go either way, but if you want to wrap it up, we wrap it up.
Yeah, I think we need to wrap this one up.
All righty. Perfect.
The PSA was valuable, but the PSA kind of took up the time of another question. So.
Well, I thought that PSA was important because, and I'll keep everyone posted as I navigate trying to deal with whatever they were trying to do. And start visiting these other websites companies I didn't even know existed to try to keep. Although I do wonder if LifeLock's blocking was so good on the two that was submitted today, they tried twice. Maybe I don't need to go to those websites and freeze at those websites as well.
Maybe they were telling you that those they they were lucky enough to block the ones you had this time. But if they had gone through those other ones that they are asking you to go block, maybe they can't block those. Maybe.
No, because there was a little link next to the block that said, you know, if you try to take out a payday loan, click here to unlock your payday loan feature. If you and click here for more info. And then when I clicked there for more info is when it took me to another web page there. And it went on to explain to me that merely freezing your credit at the big three bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and what's the other one?
Experian.
Experian. I always forget Experian.
Yeah, me too.
That freezing there does not stop payday loans. I did not know that. And that's what started frustrating me. And then they said, you have to visit, said these credit monitoring services below are what traditionally, they didn't call them just payday loans. They called them other short-term loan or something like that. And they listed some rental loan, a payday loan, and a couple other ones. They said, most of those providers of those loans use these services and you have to go there and freeze your credit. And then it apologized for not being able to do it for me. But it said that those services require that a third party cannot freeze. You have to go to them directly. And that further angered me because you should. They need to pass a rule that if I want to hire one of these credit monitoring services, they should have a right to automatically go there and freeze these things for me.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I think that was valuable. So that technically to me was as good as a question. And yeah. I just wanted to share openly. I tell you guys a lot about me. You all know that. And I want people to learn from mistakes I made. One of the biggest mistakes I made was what conventional wisdom, Chris? Was I going to wait till age 64?
You're going to wait and get your LTC insurance at 60.
I was going to buy it at 60, which had been several years ago. Well, not several, but a year ago. And I couldn't because y'all know at age 57, I suffered a massive stroke and was diagnosed with AFib. Both of those, the massive stroke and the AFib, has kept me from ever being able to get LTC again. Not even again. I never had to begin with. I shared that openly. First of all, so people, especially men, we seem to put things off. If you got a flutter in your heart, and especially if your doctor's saying, oh, you must have anxiety because you're building a brand new office, which is what my doctor told me. And that one anxiety, granted, I might have had a little anxiety, but it was AFib. And it was too late. When I actually found out it was AFib, I already thrown a blood clot into my head. So I shared openly that. But I also shared openly that I can no longer get LTC insurance. So my point is I share a lot about me in an effort to help you guys. And this payday loan thing, it's nothing for me to be embarrassed about. Everybody's had their ID stolen. I just thought having a credit freeze at the big three was all I had to worry about. If you have LifeLock and you have not turned on this payday loan lock, go to your account and turn that on. It's a little toggle switch. Turn that on.
Yeah, it looks like you have to have the step up plan too with LifeLock, the basic plan.
Yeah, I've got their I've got the top plus plan of theirs. I think I pay $300-500.
Yeah, there's three plans. The middle and the top plan look like they have it, but the bottom plan does not have this.
Okay. Well, do they have any more information on that there that you can share with our listeners?
Not really. Like it was just in the list of features that clearly called out that I think it's called Ultimate and Ultimate Plus or Ultimate Pro or something. That feature, but the base one does not have the ability, that toggle to lock payday loan applications.
Do you use a credit monitoring service?
I don't.
You might want to consider it.
Maybe.
Just saying. Anyways, folks, again, this isn't a recommendation to use a service. I'm just trying to share with you what has happened to me, and I never knew about payday loans using different credit services, and you had to lock those as well.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah, well, thanks for everybody listening. If you want to send in your own questions for us to consider for a future show, send those questions directly to Jim. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Put in the subject line that it's a question for the podcast, and then include a couple of words on the topic. That's always helpful. and we'll do our best to try to feature your question on a future show. And we'll let you know if we do. So some people may not listen to each and every show, but we'll email you if we actually do cover your questions, so you can be sure to hear our answer. And yeah, we appreciate everybody continuing to listen, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.